It's Abu here. You're probably wondering, what's different around here? And the answer is everything. I took the last year off, not just from podcasting, but from everything. I needed a reset. Last year was one of the hardest years of my life. And as you know, life doesn't just throw one thing at a time at you. It hits you with everything all at once. I hit a mental roadblock, my business hit a wall, and then I faced an unimaginable loss of someone I deeply loved. I had a reset. I went deep, asking myself, what's wrong with me? What did I do to deserve this? I struggled with grief, with loss, with relationships, with business, and family. I was operating from a place of seeking permission. Permission to let go, permission to step back, permission to prioritize myself. And then it hit me. You don't need anyone's approval to take the next step. You don't need permission to be a CEO. But you do need the tools, the mindset, and the support to lead in a way that doesn't cost you your peace. It took me over a decade to truly figure this out. And now I'm ready to keep going, sharing what's worked, what hasn't, and everything I'm still learning along the way. So if you're ready, and I know I am, hit subscribe, leave a review, and share this with someone who needs to hear it. Because this isn't just my journey, it's ours. Lastly, I just want to thank everyone that reached out to me over the last year just to check on me, make sure I was doing good. I truly appreciate the support, and I look forward to continue building more deep connections with you all.
This is the Powered AF Podcast, a show about visionaries, high performers, and entrepreneurs, and their stories on how they push past fear, overcome imposter syndrome, and navigate through the mental roadblocks in order to achieve the highest level of success. And I'm your host, Abu Fofana.
Hey, so I'm super excited to bring you this week's episode. There's probably going to be a part two of this episode because we were trying to cover so much ground and there was so much to talk about. The guest in this week's episode, her name is Khadija Bingham, and I'm super excited because we've been friends for a very long time. So to sit down with her, to go back to when it all began, to see her different life transitions, to see where she is today, has just been absolutely amazing. And that's coming from me as a friend. Now, for me as an admirer, someone who is inspired by her, who admires how she is confident in her own skin and how she steps up to the challenges, this was a really good episode. I learned so much about her. And if you just hear her story and her journey, you're going to be blown away and truly come away from this conversation inspired. There's definitely going to be a part two. However, here's part one of my conversation with Khadija Bingham. I'm super excited because today we're going to be interviewing Miss Money Honey. We're going to be interviewing and then the next person to take the mic, the next one to speak, has a lot of experience in the financial space. So we're going to have conversations around money. We're going to have conversations around wealth, but also risk taking. You know, risk taking isn't always financial. Sometimes it's betting on yourself. So today's guest, we have none other than Khadija Bingham. Miss Money Honey, how's it going?
Hello. Thank you so much for being here. I'm so excited. I feel honored to be on this podcast because it's Abu. And we all know that everything that Abu does is great. So I'm super, super, super excited to be here today. Hi, everyone. As Abu said, my name is Khadija, also known as Miss Money Honey. So yeah, thank you.
No, thank you. First of all, it's good to see you. How are you?
I am doing very, very well, right? Like, over the last 6 months, my life has changed so much. Like, what I was doing this time last year looks very different than what I'm doing now. And I think I was always happy. I think I'm just like a different version of just well right now. So my life feels a lot fuller.
It means fuller, meaning what does that mean for you?
Yeah, so I actually had to really think about this. So I just recently moved. So I was living in New York up until March, and I just moved back to Philadelphia. And there was something that I was missing that I didn't realize, and it was having the opportunity to be more connected with family and friends. In New York, I had friends out there. In New York, I wasn't far from family. But there's like little moments and instances that I'm having in my life right now that just makes me feel full. So for example, Khadija, your dad's throwing food on the grill. Like, you want to come around, just hang out outside? Like, I get to be around my mom more often. I can go sit with my grandmom on the porch for 10 minutes here and there every week, right? Those things I was missing, and I didn't realize that I was missing because I was out chasing something. I think I did what I had to do, but now I'm home and I can be a part. I'm watching kids grow up. Like, there's so many cousins that I don't know. Because I just wasn't around. I left Philly 10 years ago. And now I get to watch my goddaughter grow up, right? There's 1-year-olds that actually know who I am. So it just, it feels different.
Yeah, that's definitely a different feeling to have time, you know, where you could spend with your family. But you mentioned something, because I do want to talk about the last 6 months. But before we get there and all the transitions and why you feel fuller, you said you hadn't been back home in 10 years. So Where were you 10 years ago? Like, why'd you decide to leave Philly at that time?
Yeah, good question. So 10 years ago, I left Philly to go to school. And then once I left school, it was like I never went back. Or I never looked back. But oddly enough, I never planned to, like, I thought that I would go to Penn State for college.
Yeah.
And then I would go back to Philly. I always thought that I would stay in Philly. And then for one reason, I always felt like people would make it out the hood and then they would never come back. And then because of it, I felt like there were generations that didn't get to see the success of people because once you left, you didn't come back. I never wanted to be that person. I became that person. So I had like, there was a complex that I had for a while. Like, I always looked down, not looked down, but told myself that I wouldn't be that person that left because I wanted to be the example to show people what it looks like to graduate from college. I was the first person in my family to graduate from college. So what does it look like to graduate from college? What does it look like to have a successful career? But I had to leave to do that. But now I'm back. So hopefully I can continue to make those impacts now that I'm back. But so to further answer your question, went to Penn State, spent 5 years there, studied finance and accounting, left there, and moved to New York, worked on Wall Street for 5.5 years. Now I'm back here now.
What made you decide, you know, when you left to go to school, you know, that was kind of far away from home. You know, it's about, I think, from where you were, like 4 hours. So when you first got there on campus, you know, what was that feeling like where now you're away from home?
That's a good question. I don't know. It felt natural to me. It felt like I was doing what I was supposed to do. It didn't feel like, no, it felt natural. It literally felt like, and also when I went to Penn State, I never went home. Like, a lot of people would go home on the weekends. Not me. I felt like I would be missing something. I loved the bubble that I was in up at Penn State.
Happy Valley.
And people were like, it's a cult. And like,
it was kind of right.
People, when you go there, you love it there.
Yeah.
But I'll say that like, going to college and being away and being the first person in my family to do it, while it felt natural and it was like, I felt like it was something that I was supposed to be doing, it also, I don't want to say it felt lonely because I had friends there, but there were things that I was going through that my closest support system couldn't relate to me being out there. Like, I remember calling my mom for the first time. I got a D on an exam and I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have to change my major. I'm not going to be able to study finance because you had to have a 3.5 GPA. And my mom would say, she would say like, it's okay, Khadija, you'll figure it out. You always do. And even though that's true, that's not what I wanted to hear, right? Like, I wanted to hear, how do I figure it out? She couldn't tell me, go to office hours. She couldn't tell me, go to Lion Tutors.
And why is that?
Because she hadn't experienced it. Like, she doesn't know how to be successful on a college campus or in a college class. It was a blueprint that wasn't set. I was creating the blueprint. But when I fast forward my life now, when my sister is going to Penn State, I know exactly where to send her to so that some of the issues that I had, she didn't have. So like while going to college felt natural and while it felt like it was something that I was supposed to do being on campus, there was a lot of just experiences since I was experiencing it for the first time that I kind of had to go through and navigate on my own.
What kind of pressure does that put on you? Because yeah. You talked about you had a younger sister. You're the first to be.
It's so much pressure. Mm. It's so much pressure because you want to get everything right. Right. Like I felt like for the longest time, I felt like if I didn't do this right, then I would be the reason why no one else tried. And I didn't want to be that.
So who put that pressure on you?
Nobody. Nobody. Like nobody put that pressure on me. It was completely self-inflicted. My mom is so supportive that like if it didn't work out, my mom always knew me as a person that like, I always tried my best. So if something didn't work out, she always attributed to the fact that like, well, I know you tried your best, right? So she never put those pressures on me. But I think that me wanting to elevate the trajectory for my family, I put that pressure on myself. Me being the first person to go to college straight from high school, I wanted everybody behind me to do the same thing. So I'm like, I have to do this right. If I don't do this right, if I don't look like I'm having a good time, if like I fail at this, why would anybody else try?
That's a lot of pressure. That's such a mature way of thinking, yeah. Especially you're out alone trying to figure things out and the people that, you know, you related to up until that moment, you no longer relate to. And so what toll did that take on you having that level of expectations of yourself?
You know, I think that having the level of expectation of myself, I would not consider a toll being taken on me. I would think of it as like motivation, right? Mm-hmm. It motivated me to get this right. And luckily, I also enjoyed what I enjoyed being in school, right? Like, it's not like I was trying to make something work that wasn't working. It was working for me. Like, I excelled in, when I got to Penn State, I got involved in everything I can get involved. I had a great social life. I had great extracurriculars.
Because typically what people would take away is, oh, she was always in the books, always studying.
Yeah, no, like, I could have partied more, but like, I definitely could have. I mean, I didn't pull a U. Boo's probably going to be mad at me for telling you this, but we would study and he'd be like, DJ, I'll be back in 10 minutes. I need to show up at this party. And he would really be back in like 15 minutes because he would take 2 minutes to walk there. He would say hi for 10 minutes and then he would come back. Yeah, my social life was not quite like that. I would show up for the whole party. However, like I could have partied more. I did have to study a lot. I went to school. Mind you, I'm the first person in my family to go to college and I worked on 3 degrees at one time. That was busy. So even the people that I was meeting there, our workload looked very different, right? I'm working on a master's and a bachelor's at the same time. So I still, even the people that you would think I could relate to a lot more now, yeah, their experience in college was still also different than mine. Right. But college was so fun for me that like, to answer your original question, it wasn't like I hate this but I gotta do a good job, because like I think going into it I thought I have to do a good job. But while I got there, when I got there, I was thriving. Yeah. So it was easy for me to continue to go forward. Like I never had thoughts of like not finishing school. Yeah. And you know, when you have those thoughts, you're like, but I have to because X, Y, and Z. All of that was removed once I started to thrive in the environment.
And then what did you study while you were there?
So I studied, I entered in as a finance major. Mm. And then there was this guy named Jamie Campbell, who's the dean of diversity. He pulled me to the side and he's like, have you heard of our 5-year Masters of Accounting program? I said, Jamie, I don't know how I'm paying for 4 years. You want me to pay for 5? He said, don't worry about that. Well, he shouldn't have said don't worry about that because he ain't paid for my 5th year. So I should have been worried more about that.
Right.
And he introduced me to the MAC program. He said, I would really like to see it more diverse. And I was like, okay, 5 years, a master's, that sounds like a good deal to me. So when I left school, I left with a master's of accounting, a bachelor's of accounting, and a bachelor's of finance.
Y'all heard that? That back.
When I left school, I left with a master's of accounting, a bachelor's of accounting, and a bachelor's in finance.
Listen, 3 degrees.
Yeah.
Three degrees.
And you know what? I didn't even know that I was working on 3 degrees. Wow. Until, because I just thought Master's of Accounting and Bachelor's of Finance. I didn't know that I was getting a Bachelor's of Accounting as well. Mm. We were in a, and mind you, like, during my year, there were 4 Black people in our Master's of Accounting program. And it was like time for us to not apply for graduation, but like our intent to graduate or something, we had to mark in the system. The system is so archaic, it's very different now. Mm. He was explaining to us, he's like, if you're also a finance major, this is what yours is gonna look like. And I raised my hand and I said, sir, I'm working on 3 degrees. And he was like, yeah. And I was like, oh, can y'all say educated Black woman? Hey. And the whole class started cracking up laughing, but like, I didn't even know what I was doing. I was just doing it. Mm. And then once I found out what I was doing, it felt great, because once I shared it with people, everyone was so proud. They're mm. like, what?
And what, is that a feeling you feel like you've experienced before? Mm. Do you feel like you've, when people say they're proud of you, you actually receive it?
Yeah. So I think that there's important for me for certain people to be proud of me. I think that.
And who are those people?
I think that my mom being proud is very important to me, because I watched her sacrifice so much. So her being proud is very important to me. I didn't know that it was important to me for my dad to be proud of me until I graduated from college, and at my graduation party, it was lit. Everyone was wasted. And my uncle came up to me and he was like, yo, sorry, dad, if you're watching this. He was like, yo, like, your dad cried about this. I said, my dad, what? He's like, yeah, like, he's really proud of you. And I'm like, no, like, cause he's not like the type to be like, DJ, I'm proud of you. He just be like, okay. Like, he was never that type. And then my mom had mentioned to me that she had a conversation with him, and he was like, son, like, I don't know. He's like, I know that you're proud of Khadijah, but like, it feels so different for me. He's like, I'm a high school dropout, a felon, and a janitor, and my daughter just graduated with 3 degrees. And that resonated with me in a way that I didn't expect. Mm. And I don't know if now, like, I try and continue to make him proud. I think I just felt really good in that moment that I was able to make him proud, because it also made me feel different about what my trajectory, like, what I was able to do too. I'm like, damn, like, my dad was like, he was a high school dropout, mm. a felon. And in spite of all of that, I'm here. So it made me just feel differently about my accomplishments, finding out that he was proud in that way.
Would you say you have a close relationship with both your parents?
So my mom, yes. My mom is my best friend. Mm. My dad, we're getting there. So I've gotten a lot closer to my dad this year than I've ever been. And it's very interesting. For the first time ever, like, I've, like, whenever I do something cool, I never think to call my dad and show him. So I like hung up a shelf for the first time.
Yeah.
And when I called him, he didn't answer. I was pissed. I'm like, how's he not going to answer? I want to show him, like, I'm just this handy person. I'm using his drill. So I think over the last year, me being back home, me needing his help, he's showed up for me this year in ways that he's never had. So when I moved from New York to Philadelphia, I purchased a duplex. He helped me get the Airbnb. So I'm listing one unit as an Airbnb. He's like, my friends call him the property manager. They be like, Khadijah, that is not your Airbnb. That's his Airbnb. Like, I'll go in, I pull into the driveway, and there'll just be furniture. I'm like, dad, what is this? He's finding stuff on Craigslist. He's like, he was really invested. And I don't feel like in the past he's ever been invested in me that way, but it could be because he didn't know how to relate to what I was doing. So like, now he probably feels like he can add value to my life, but college was probably nothing that he felt like he could relate to. Like, me going to work on Wall Street, he probably didn't feel like his input had value. But now I feel like he does, and I think as a result, our relationship is getting a lot better.
And there's this, like, theme that's, you know, underlying theme that's happening in your life. You're overachieving. Mm.
and you're going to college and you're overachieving because you're putting these, setting these expectations on yourself. You then graduate with 3 degrees, not one, not two, but 3 degrees. Do you think, where do you think that comes from? Do you, you know, what type of household did you grow up in? Did your parents encourage you to do that? Or where did that come from?
It's funny that you bring that up because me and my mom had a conversation about this last week. And she brought up, when I was 7 years old, I was at the kitchen table. She was helping me with my homework and I did not want to do it. And she's like, Khadijah, you have to get this done, right? Like, you have to care about school. School is important. School is important. You need to, she was like, and like, school doesn't stop after high school. You're going to college. And she said that I had a smart ass mouth. And I responded and I said, well, you didn't go to college and you're doing just fine. And she said that was a reality check for her. And she said, how can I require something of her that I never even tried myself? Mm. She's like, I didn't even try to go to school. And from there, she did enroll to get her associate's degree.
Oh, wow.
So like, and then went on and got her bachelor's degree. So like, was it something in my household where like, there was like this immense amount of pressure to go to college? Like no, like I don't think my mom would have forced me, but was it clear that it was important for me to achieve? It was. Like, I did grow up, like if my homework wasn't done, why are you on the phone with your friends? Mm-hmm. Like, why are you outside? Like, you need to get this stuff done well, right? And then you can have fun. So that was instilled in me because now, like, I see people, like, I know they don't do what they supposed to do and they be out. And I'm like, how you reward yourself? You didn't do work yet.
Right.
But also, I would say that, like, me watching my mom struggle, make something out of nothing, and, like, literally, like, make the impossible happen, it was always a reason why I knew I couldn't give up. Like, when I had that class that I told you I got that first D in, there was someone who lived next to me. Her background was much different than mine. And she was like, Khadijah, so like, what are you going to do? Like, oh, so background. I got the D, and then, but everybody got a D or worse. Maybe few people got good grades. And the professor was like, you know what? I'm going to drop the lowest score. Mm. So pretty much you have a fresh slate. Mm. So I'm like, oh, like I can continue to try. And this girl says to me, she's like, what are you going to do? I was like, well, he said you're going to drop the lowest score, so like I'm just work really hard. She was like, oh, like I'm just going to drop it because I don't want it to mess up my 4.0. and I was like, oh, well, like I don't know about you, but I watched my mom do the impossible way too many times for me not to try. Mm. For me to give up, like I can't do that. And I called my mom that day and I thanked her. I was like, thank you so much, because like my mom never let me win at anything. I only won if I deserved to win. Mm. And we was racing down the street, I only won if I was actually faster than her. We was playing Uno, I only won if I actually won. So like I would say, growing up in my house, there was an expectation for you to work hard, and there was also an expectation for you. You only won if you deserved to win. So I knew how to lose. Like, mm-hmm. I grew up knowing and understanding how to lose, so that when I took a loss, it wasn't the end of the world. I wasn't ready to drop a class. I wasn't ready to give up. It was just like, oh, okay, I gotta try harder. I gotta be able to get it done next time. Like, if I work harder, I'll win. So I appreciate her for that, and I hope that answered your question.
No, it did. Okay. It did. And you know, that's such a good lesson to learn at a young age, learning how to lose.
Yeah.
You know, and what they were instilling in you was like, hey, try your best. Mm. Right? Like, don't give up the first time and try your best. And so I think people listening in, you know, they'll take a lot of value from what you just said. And what I want to do now is, you know, because there's so much, like we could sit here and talk so much. And there's so much, you know. And then I also personally know you. So like,
so yeah, you know what to ask that right. Nobody's just going to find on Instagram.
Right. What I want to do now is transition from you go to college and now you are going to get your first full-time job. What was your first full-time job after college?
I only had one job.
Okay.
I worked so I did do 6 internships in college.
Okay.
And then after school I went to go work for Goldman Sachs.
Yep.
within their internal audit department.
And what was that like? Because Goldman is an easy company to get into, right? It's a lot of work, and not everyone, again, gets it admitted or gets a job offer from Goldman. So what was that like, you know, reaching? Because it's like the number one, you know, company when we talk about financial or investments. What was that like from going from school to landing at Goldman?
Yeah, it was interesting.
Yeah.
I never thought I would be at a place like Goldman Sachs. And not because I didn't think that I was capable. It's because I was never exposed to something like that. I did my first internship with Comcast.
Yeah.
And if you would have asked me, I was probably going to have my first full-time job at Comcast. And I would... like kill it there. And that was because that was what I was exposed to. That was my first exposure to corporate America. It was my first time seeing Black women dressed up, looking nice, saying, let's do lunch, let's do coffee. It was like the holy grail. I was like, this is amazing. Like, this is awesome. Then I get to college. I join all these different programs. And there's one program in particular, it was called MLT. And through MLT, I was exposed to all these different like finance firms and Wall Street stuff. And I'm like, oh shit, like maybe I should. And the people in the program were like intense as hell. So I'm like, maybe I need to get a little more intense. Mm. And maybe I should start applying for these other opportunities. So that's how even like the thought of working at a place like Goldman Sachs came to mind, because it was never on my trajectory. Even though I was a finance major, I thought I was going to do finance at Comcast.
Right.
Remember, I always thought that I was going to go back to Philly. I didn't want to go to New York. Mm. I wanted to go back to Philly and make an impact in my community. I didn't think I could do that from New York. And honestly, it's true. I didn't make the impact. Well, I'm working on now making an impact in my community. But I got the internship at Goldman.
Yeah.
So that was my final internship.
Wow.
And it's interesting that we talk about pressure, because I think that the pressure was less, it was more pressure at Goldman than it was being the first person to go to college.
Mm.
I had a mentor, my manager at Goldman said to me, he said, Khadija, I need you to do a good job here, because then you'll leave the door open for people behind you.
Wow.
He's like, the way HR is set up, if you don't do a good job, there's a filter, right? Like, okay, Black woman, Penn State did a great job. Let's get more of them.
Mm.
Black woman, Penn State didn't do a good job. Up. Let's recruit less at Penn State. Let's recruit less Black people. Let's recruit less Black people at Penn State.
Mm.
So that was pressure. Like knowing that, like feeling like your success is what keeps a door open for someone behind you. That is a lot of pressure. However, I do believe that everything in my life happened in the order that it was supposed to. Those five internships ahead of Goldman made me ready for that Goldman internship.
Mm.
So that when it was time for me to intern there, I wasn't making rookie mistakes, right? Like, I knew how to send a calendar invite to the right person, right? Like, you know, it's like little things like that, that like as an intern could be, feel like a big deal. But I was ready for that internship because all the other things had prepared me for that. So when it was internship, I killed it.
Mm.
I killed that Goldman internship, and that turned into a full-time offer, which I almost didn't take.
Why?
Because it was internal audit and I wasn't passionate about that, right? Like I thought that I wanted to be a wealth manager. I wanted to learn how to help Black people manage their money. And that just wasn't what I was doing in that role.
Yeah.
But with some convincing, I ended up taking the role at Goldman. And then I spent I was there for 5.5 years.
Wow.
Yeah, so I was there for 5.5 years in internal audit within the entire time. But halfway through, I did switch teams with an internal audit. So that's I stopped good. Auditing and started doing more fun stuff.
No, that's really good. Your resilience there, right? And to stay, even though it wasn't the first choice of the thing that you wanted to do. Because I think most times, if it's not the first choice for people, they end up leaving. But you made it a point to work your way over to the places that you wanted to be within the company. And that's a hard company to work
for. It's a hard company to work for, but also like, Abu, like, You know how, remember, let's go back to the point of like me it being important for me to make my mom proud.
Right.
Child, she told everybody, she didn't know what a Goldman Sachs was. She was telling everybody her daughter worked on Wall Street. She was so proud.
Mm.
My daughter worked on Wall Street. My daughter worked on, which also played in, well, I'm sure we'll get to this, if not in this episode, part two, some of the thoughts around leaving. I'm like, will my next thing make them as proud? Right?
And let's talk about that a little. And we're probably going to have to record a part two, honestly, because, you know, I wanted to just give people a background of, I didn't want them to think like, oh, she was always this way.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of transitions and a lot of things that you had to mentally overcome to really be where you are in this space where it doesn't matter the environment, right? Mm-hmm. Like you're able to still succeed. Let's talk about that transition because, you know, you decided, right? Everyone's going around, my best friend Khadija work at Goldman. I know someone that work on Wall Street. But then you're having this conflict of wanting to leave. Mm-hmm. You know, where does that come from, and what did you think you would do once you left?
Yeah, so it was always important for me to make an impact and feel like I could see the direct impact in the work that I was doing. I started Money Honey as a blog in 2016 because of a conversation.
And then what is Money Honey?
So Money Honey is a business that I currently run now, Money Honey Financial, where we offer bookkeeping, tax prep, and tax planning for small businesses and individuals. However, before I monetized Money Honey was a vlog. So there's some YouTube videos out there of me that I hope no one goes to search for because they're terrible. But I had a conversation with a professor and I had all these questions for him around finance. I'm a finance major. This is my senior year, right? I know about stocks. I know about diluted shares. I know about what this says about the market if this happens, but I don't even know where to go buy a stock. And so I'm like, hey, like I know all this stuff, but like, where exactly do I go to buy a stock?
Wow.
And like, people be talking about credit cards. Like I hear they're bad, but like, I also hear they're good. Like, how does that really work? Like everybody I know talk about credit cards. It's about credit card debt.
Yeah.
But like, I also hear about people that's not in credit card debt and they use credit cards.
So he
spent the hour walking me through all of this, and I left.
Yeah,
and I was like, "How many people got these same questions, but they don't have access to a professor to ask these questions to?" So Money Honey was born because I'm like, "There's no way I'm here getting all this information just for me to only have it. I have to share it."
Mm.
So I always knew that there was something else out there for me. And could I have made an impact on my community at a place like Goldman Sachs? Absolutely, right? Like Goldman has programs where they're in the community, they're investing in Black women, they're investing in entrepreneurs. Is it easy to get into roles like that right away? Absolutely not. So I will say there came a point where I actually had to stop doing Money Honey for a while because I wanted to pass the CPA exam. Once it was time for me to bring it back, because, you know, it's like I felt like I gave up my firstborn child. Mm. So I did eventually get back to Money Honey.
Yeah.
And once I brought Money Honey back, it just made me feel so full in a way that like how I feel full now.
Yeah.
Obviously, because I'm doing Money Honey full time now. But
what about it made you feel full? The fact that you were now able to see the impact? Like, is that the thing you couldn't see when you were at Goldman?
That's a really good question. I felt like through Money Honey, like, so I interviewed you on Money Honey, right?
Yeah.
So I had a platform, Let's Talk Money Honey, where I interview experts. I never claimed to be an expert, right? Like the goal of Money Honey was just to cultivate conversations around financial literacy and with underrepresented communities. I brought on people who were experts and who could help teach. And I would just try and interview in a way that would really like make it understandable for people. And I would share my journey also, like, yo, I got all this student loan debt and this is how I'm going to try and pay it off, or like my mistakes. And the way people received that information, the way that I could see like how I was really helping people,
right?
That's what like filled me up. Like even the stuff I wasn't an expert in, I would buy books on it. I would be reading articles. Like I would be actually doing extra stuff to try and be able to provide more resources to people. And that's what filled me up. I never read an article on what I was doing at Goldman. Mm. Like, I just came, I did my job. I did good at my job, but I didn't work to be great at it. Everything with Money Honey, I really wanted to be great. And that's how I knew that, like, that's where I needed to be putting my time.
So when you decided, you know, there was this passion of yours that was outside of the job that, you know, people now associated you with, you know, you're working at this big financial institution. Like, what did you tell your parents that you were leaving? Did you leave and then tell them later? Like, what actually happened in your version when you actually decided to leave to do Money Honey full time?
Yeah, so that's a great question, because Money Honey was a side hustle for a long time.
Yeah.
Money Honey was how I spent, like, I was at Goldman from, say I would be working, there would be times I'd be working at Goldman till 10 o'clock every night. I would be back in the office 6:30, 7 a.m. working on my own thing from 7 to 9, studying for the CPA from 7 to 9, right? So because it was a side thing for so long, so many people were also invested in it that, like, it wasn't a surprise to people that I would eventually be trying to leave Goldman to do this full time. Once I made the decision to actually leave, I made that decision earlier than I planned. Mm. I was actually, I'm a good person and I always do the right thing. Once I started making money once Money Honey was monetized and I started making money, I reported it to Goldman as an outside activity and they asked me to shut the business down. And once they asked me to shut the business down, the decision was made for me, right? Like, I mean, I put on a website, like, coming soon. And when someone reached out to me, I would do stuff. Yeah. But I knew then that I had to create my exit strategy, because I couldn't give up something that was so important to me for something that wasn't as important to me. So, like, on my phone, I have all my affirmations and it says, I will be a full-time entrepreneur by 2023. Goldman sped up they sped up my timeline. I plan to be there. I'm supposed to still be there today. But the decision was kind of made for me. And when I shared it, even when I shared it with my manager, he was like, okay, like, I'm not, like, I don't want to see you go, but, like, I'm not surprised. Like, we all know you love Money Honey and this will be a thing at some point. When I shared it with my mom, she was supportive because that's how she is. When I shared it with my dad, he was supportive initially. And then he was like, don't you think you still got so much to learn at Goldman? I'm like, there's a lot I can learn at Goldman, but it's just a lot that I don't want to learn. Mm. And he was probably the only one person that made me upset during this transition. Mm. Because he's like, I just really feel like there's still so much for you to learn there. And I'm like, you're right, there is. And then an article of someone, I won't say any names, left their big four job to run a small accounting firm. Yeah. And she made this much money. He sends me this article. And he probably sent it with good intentions. Like, oh, look, like, you actually can do this. Like, people are actually doing this. But to me, it was a slap in the face. Mm. Because when I told you I wanted to do it, you didn't think I should. Mm. But now you saw somebody else do it. And now it's something that you think that I can now pursue. Like, somebody else stamped it. So now it's fine. And that was like a slap in the face to me, because when have I ever said I was going to do something and I didn't do it? Yeah. Right? Like, I told you I was going to college. I did that. And I exceeded expectations, right? Like, I didn't just get one degree, I got three. So, like, why is it that I'm telling you that I'm gonna do something? I didn't just go get a job, right? I got a job on Wall Street, right? Like, why is it now that I'm telling you that I'm gonna do something, why are you still doubting that I'm gonna get it done? Why does it take you to see this other person doing it for you? And I'm sure he had good intentions. Right, and he's probably displacing his inabilities on me. But that was probably the hardest for me during the transition.
Or sometimes it's like, you know, there's nearsight and then there's foresight and then there's insight, right? And so for him, he may have needed the insight to be able to see your foresight. You've already seen it.
Right.
You know, that was what's been always been on your heart since you started it. And the more exposure he got to other people doing it, and he was like, okay, this does make sense. You should go ahead and do it.
Right.
And, you know, what I've learned from the people closest to us, they want the safest decisions for us. And it's not out of harm.
Right. That's what he thought was the best for me.
Exactly. Right. And in his mind, he made it make sense. Mm-hmm. Like, wait, you should still learn. Because it's also not a bad path. Right. Right?
It's a great place. It's a great place. Like, I worked really hard. So even like, you know, like people are like, oh, like I'm still trying to figure it out. I was in a great space to still be trying to figure it out, right? Like, I landed at, that's some people's dream job. End all be all for some people, right? Yeah. So, like, you're right. It's a great place. So, he had good intentions, but I'm like, you know.
All right. So, I'm going to transition it again because we definitely gonna have to have another interview. But let me ask you some quick, rapid questions, right? If that's okay. And we'll, you know, close out this part one of the interview. So, you know, you're running Money Honey, and just tell people again, what is Money Honey and what does it do?
Yeah, so Money Honey is a boutique financial accounting firm where we offer bookkeeping, tax prep, and tax planning for small businesses and individuals. There'll be more to come as I continue to grow.
So as you are operating this company, what's sort of like the top things you're seeing with the small businesses that you're working with, or the top questions that people are asking you?
Yeah, really good question. And one of the problems that I'm trying to solve through Money Honey, we're in a space right now where a lot of people are side hustlers or new entrepreneurs, and what they don't understand is the type of taxes that they should be paying. A lot of people don't realize if you're selling a product, depending on the state, you need to pay sales tax. A lot of people don't realize you want to be an S corp because on Instagram you heard that you save money, that you also should be paying payroll tax every quarter. So I would say that like one of the biggest things that I'm seeing is that everybody's excited about having a business, but we don't always know how to stay compliant with those businesses. My goal is for like, as we're growing, how do we make sure that we're growing something that can't anybody take from us, especially the IRS or any of the local authorities? So like, I just really want people to understand their responsibilities as a taxpayer and a business owner so that like, they don't run into expensive problems.
And then where could people start? Because I know there's so many Instagram people online and YouTubers, like, what would you advise them on discerning between this is actually good information, you actually should see someone, a tax professional?
So I think that they should. And someone asked me a really good question. They're like, at what point in my business should I hire a CPA? And I think that like, even before you start making money, you should at minimum book a 15-minute free consultation. At minimum.
And what does a CPA do exactly?
Yeah, good question. So a CPA stands for Certified Public Accountant. And CPAs do a lot, right? Like there's many different focuses. There's an audit focus, there's a tax focus, there's a financial reporting focus. But if you have a CPA that's specialized in taxes, what they'll do is one, help make sure you understand your responsibility as a taxpayer. They'll prepare your taxes for you. They'll also,
thank you for joining us at the Powered AF podcast. Make sure to visit our website and make sure to follow our podcast anywhere you listen to the podcast to make sure you never miss a show. And please, 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 if you enjoyed this episode and this show, please make sure to leave us a review. It really, really does help. And last thing, if you're interested in this freebie that I just released, I want you to check this out. Recently, I put together a free online training on how to 10X your sales online. This is for business owners who are struggling with making consistent sales online. Whether you run a product or service-based business, this is the perfect training for you. The free training is still up and you can access it by going to poweryourlaunch.com/pod. Again, poweryourlaunch.com/pod. That's P-O-D. All right. Thanks again for listening in. I'll see you during our next show.